A lot happening to the north, man. Also happens to be Husky Week. Our guest keeps us wired in on all things Seattle sports. ESPN 710. Check it out online, 710sports.com. His Twitter handle is at the B Gustafson. Brandon, always appreciate your time. How's life treating you? And of course, our pup, Maverick.
Maverick and I are doing great. He's not a fan of the rainy day Monday that we're having and the forecast that looks like we're going to have here for the next week or so. But he's a pup growing up in the greater Seattle area, so he's going to have to suck it up. But overall, we're doing pretty good here.
Just keep a lot of towels handy. That would be my advice.
Yeah, no kidding.
So start with the Mariners. Big announcement over the weekend that Kyle Seager will not be returning. We know Adrian Beltre won a couple of gold gloves. Seager, a decade on the hot corner, was an all-star, won a gold glove. And when you look on those all-time Mariner lists, you know, the only names ahead of him in some major categories are Edgar, Ichiro, Griffey, Buehner. So kind of what's the pulse, what's the buzz about his departure?
Yeah, that was expected. It seemed like it was one of those things where even though he was coming off a pretty good year, mostly his power-wise run production, stuff like that, just seemed like it was kind of a split that we all expected to happen. He's made it pretty clear that he and Jerry DePoto, the general manager, president of baseball ops, they haven't had the rosiest relationship over the last few years, and it just kind of seemed like this was a split that was going to happen, especially because he had a $20 million team option for 2022, and I know that they're planning to be pretty aggressive in free agency in the trade market, and there's some guys available potentially to replace him at third base. So sounds like they're going to go all in this offseason to a certain extent, and this seemed like Seager wasn't really in the long-term plans, but he had a great year this year, as I mentioned, was really big in terms of hitting the ball out of the ballpark, driving in runs, and he was a big reason why they were in it until the final day, and they won 90 games. And he, kind of like Felix Hernandez, you know, one of those guys that really was one of the few reasons why you would tune into a Mariners game for about a decade or so, just kind of some tough times here. So hopefully he lands in a good spot. I know he did a lot with the community here and everything like that also, so it'll be interesting to see where he ends up landing and what the Mariners do to replace that production at a premium spot.
I want to get to some Kraken. Fell to the Broadway Blues, but they did have their first winning streak. They beat Montreal and Minnesota last week. So one of the things I'm getting that, yeah, it's great to have a team in the Pacific Northwest. I know Seattle's going nuts. But would I be accurate in saying a lot of folks are watching NHL hockey for the first time, and yeah, they might love their Kraken because they're local, but just realizing just how awesome and electrifying this game is.
Oh, man, you can count me as one of them, man. Like, I've always had a deep appreciation for hockey. I always try to tune into the Stanley Cup playoffs and the finals and everything like that, but one of the biggest barriers for me in terms of getting as deep into it as I am with football and baseball was I just didn't have a team to follow, and that made it a lot harder for me to know kind of who was good around the league, which teams were perennially competing for the Stanley Cup and whatnot. And now having a team and being able to see who they're playing and the faces on the other side of the ice, it's been a lot of fun. And I know that I'm not the only one who feels that way. I was lucky enough to be able to cover the first home game at Climate Pledge Arena, which unfortunately they fell to the Vancouver Canucks, losing a tough one in the third period there to a team that's probably going to be their main rival, at least geographically. And that place was electric, man. Like, I was up there in the press bridge. I could barely talk to my coworker, Mike Lefko, who was like 2 feet to my left. Could barely hear each other. And I know that the players and Dave Haxtell, the head coach, I know they really appreciated that. So it's going to be really fun to see what they're able to build here. They're a tough team, and aside from I think just really they had the one blowout loss to Philly. They've been in every game, and they're tough. They fly around the ice. I know they love to hit. So it's been cool. I know that there are a lot of people, especially probably a lot of kids growing up here in the Seattle area that are falling in love with hockey, and that's really cool to see.
You know, I know you had John Morosi of the NHL Network on your station, and he talked about Brandon Tanev. I mean, guy's never had more than 14 goals in a season. Now he's among the top 10 goal scorers already. What did he have to say about kind of this early season explosion? And also, kind of seems like he's already made kind of a neat connection with the fans.
Yeah, I mean, he's admittedly my favorite player to watch just because, like, to me, he's like the real-life Happy Gilmore. Just watching him fly around the ice. He's got, like, body parts flying everywhere. He's just throwing his body at dudes, checking them on the side. His nickname is Turbo, which is just so fitting for the way that he plays. But, yeah, John said it's pretty clear that his legend is continuing to grow here in Seattle. That was after they got a win last Tuesday over the Canadiens, and Tanev scored two more in that game. So it's been cool to see him kind of emerge, because I remember starting the year, he was a fourth-line winger, and his role was just kind of to be that energy guy, and he helped on some penalty kills and stuff like that. But he's getting more and more time with some of the higher lines. He's played some second and third line for him, and it's been really cool to see. And I know a big reason why people have fallen in love with him is his headshot.
Right.
It's hilarious. I post that every single time he scores. It's one of the funniest things. And if people look that up, his headshot with the Kraken, his headshot when he was with with the Pittsburgh Penguins. I mean, that dude's just funny, and it's cool to see that he's had such a quick connection. I mean, I was at the home opener, and I don't think anybody got a bigger standing ovation or louder cheers when the players were being introduced on the ice for the first time to Brandon Tanev, which is pretty cool.
Oh, characters throughout NHL history are a staple of following that league. As a pretty big hockey fan, when I heard about the draft and I saw that they landed Yanni Gourde from Tampa Bay, a guy just won two cups. I know he was injured early in the season, but in hockey, you got to be strong up the middle. He's a really good all-around center. What did Morosi also, talk about the value of getting him and kind of the kind of contributor he'll be?
Yeah, John kind of talked about, he's so in tune with the NHL world and the MLB world, which just makes me envy him so much. Yeah. He does such a good job, but he was talking about how he was talking to a scouting director of an NHL team and talking about how hard it is to find a center, like a true center who is a goal scorer, who helps distribute the puck to other people and gets assists that way, who can play defense. And John thinks really highly of Yanni Gourde. I mean, he called him a 200-foot player playing, end-to-end on the ice. And, you mentioned Yanni Gourde played for the Lightning, who won the last two cups, and he was their third line center, and that more had to do with, obviously, the Lightning have been the best team in the NHL the last few years, and more so than his talent level. So he's been doing some first line, some second line here, and honestly, the Kraken are just lucky he's playing right now. I mean, he had off-season shoulder surgery. It sounded kind of unlikely that we were going to see him until maybe mid to late November, December, and I think he missed three games. So they've been pretty lucky to have him out there, and it shows. I mean, he's flying around the ice. He's constantly putting pressure on opposing goalies. He's a really crisp passer, and I think that one of the things I saw yesterday when they lost to the Rangers was just they were so close on a few of these kind of crossing plays, and you could just see the timing was just off. And you have to realize that Gourde and these guys, they've only been together since late July. I think the expansion draft was July 23rd or something like that. They didn't practice until a few weeks later. So they're still getting that chemistry down, and I think that Yanni Gourde getting on the ice and just everything he brings from an offensive and defensive perspective, I mean, that's only going to help these guys going forward. And it's been fun to get him on the ice for sure.
Yeah, like you said, one of the reasons he was a third-line center was because Tampa was loaded and had Alex Killorn and Steven Stamkos. Talking with Brandon Gustafson of ESPN 710 in Seattle to the Seahawks, with three wild-card teams now, they're only a game behind Carolina for the final spot. And I get, yay, they beat Jacksonville. But it kind of revived the season a little bit. And on the injury front, Brandon, what did Pete Carroll have to say about Russell Wilson and Chris Carson perhaps really maybe being back for the Packers after the bye?
Yeah, it sounds like they're both definitely aiming to do that. I mean, if I had to guess, I'd say that Russell Wilson being back is probably more likely than Chris Carson. Russell got the finger out of his, got the pin out of his finger today. He posted a picture of that on his Twitter about an hour or two ago. So that's good news. Now it's just a matter of seeing how that's going to recover. And luckily for him and the Seahawks, they have the bye week, so they've got some time here to get him right, get him healthy, make sure that he's able to do everything he needs to do. Because I mean, you're going to Lambeau in November. It's not going to be very warm there, and he's never been somebody that's played with a glove or anything like that, so it'll be kind of interesting to see if he's able to get back, how he's able to handle the element side of it versus just, you know, going out and playing quarterback like we know he can do. But I know that Pete thinks very highly of Russell in terms of his ability to just get healthy and stay healthy and recover from things a lot faster than most people. And then with Carson, I guess he told Pete either today or over the last few days that he's aiming to play against Green Bay. So that'll be big. That'll be really big for this offense. Obviously, they had the big day yesterday against Jacksonville, but Jacksonville has one win, and it's against against a Dolphins team that looks somehow even worse than the Jaguars. I mean, those might be the two worst teams in the NFL that went and squared off over in London. Gave those guys a good show. But it'll be good to have both those guys back. You know, hopefully that's in the same week or not. But Geno's done a pretty good job overall. Some of the stuff that he's getting kind of hammered for from fans and whatnot isn't really in his control. A lot of it has to do with what they trusted him to do from a play calling perspective. So hopefully Russell can get back in there and they can open up the playbook a little bit, especially seeing as the Packers are looking pretty good lately.
Yeah. A couple final thoughts for Brandon Gustafson, ESPN 710 on Seattle. Obviously, the defense has struggled. They've actually been pretty good two of the last three games. I know Marquise Blair's been injured. During the week, you read about Bobby Wags, Dunlap, Puna Ford. So moving forward, now with the bye, how are they looking health-wise on that side of the ball? Because, Brandon, they're going to have to be more consistent regardless of who's playing quarterback.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Good news is, honestly, on the defensive side, they're pretty healthy overall. I mean, the big injury going into this last game from a defensive perspective was Daryl Taylor, who's their young defensive end. He's leading them with four sacks. He had the really scary-looking neck injury 2 weeks ago in Pittsburgh. He got carted off. That was all just precautionary. You never know how that stuff goes. And he was trying really hard to play against the Saints, but he was just a little too sore to get going. But he was back, and he played, I think, about 40% of their snaps. And he didn't get a tackle. He didn't get a sack, but he had two QB hits. I constantly saw him in the backfield. So getting him right and giving him an extra week to really get healthy, especially when you're about to go up against Aaron Rodgers, that's going to be big. But yeah, defensive wise, they're doing pretty well. They still have some stuff they can shore up in the run game. They've been burned in some short passes and the flats and the screen games, which was something that KJ Wright took care of a lot in the last few years. And obviously he's over in Las Vegas with the Raiders now, but definitely trending in the right direction. Some of that has to do with the teams they faced. And that Saints game was really poor weather, and Jameis Winston, who got hurt yesterday, he just really wasn't having the best game and didn't have a whole lot of weapons outside of Alvin Kamara, but they're turning in the right direction. Sounds like they're a lot more confident with their cornerbacks, with DJ Reed and Sidney Jones and Trey Brown, the rookies. So it'll be cool to see what they look like coming off a week where they can get healthy, get right, study Aaron Rodgers, and just really go after it and try to make a run at this thing.
And lastly, Oregon and Washington. I know you're a Husky grad, but this week it's obviously been a disappointing season. They did beat Stanford. I know per se you don't cover Washington, but kind of curious. What's the buzz early in the week about Ducks Husky Saturday?
Oh man, I have a lot of thoughts about the direction of the UW Huskies program that I won't be able to get to all of it, but. Not super thrilled with their offense. I know I'm not the only one. A lot of just uncreative play calling and play design from John Donovan, the offensive coordinator. The defense has been a little better of late, but you know they're still giving up far too much on the ground, and that's something that they really just haven't had an issue with over the last few years. So that's a little surprising. I know that a lot of people up here are clamoring for Sam Heward, highly touted five-star recruit. His uncle Brock works with me at 710, and his dad Damon obviously starred for the Huskies as well. But it seems like they're still sticking with Dylan Morris, for better or worse. Hopefully, you know, getting that late score against Stanford in a game where they just really could not do much of anything in terms of getting points on the board. Hopefully that late touchdown kind of helps push things forward. But, yeah, I mean, that's a tough matchup. Oregon's playing good ball. I know that they fell to Stanford, I think it was. But, I mean, they're the cream of the crop in the Pac-12 right now. So the Huskies got their work cut out for them, that's for sure.
Well, it's always a fun week, and it's going to be an interesting game, to say the least. Folks, he's Brandon Gustafson, keeping us wired, as always, into what's happening in Seattle. Online, 710sports.com. Keep up with all his great work. His Twitter handle is at TheBGustafson. Brandon, always a lot of fun. Always appreciate your time and insight. Be well, and always look forward to talking again soon.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
All right, take it easy.